You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the SmartCast Microlearning Podcast Series on ulcerative colitis, hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Kia Jones, Medical Director at Med Learning Group, and I will be the host of today's podcast. This is a fourth of five podcasts in the series titled Treatment Selection in Ulcerative Colitis, Optimizing Outcomes Through Patient-Centered Decision-Making. Today's podcast will focus on patient-centered treatment selection in ulcerative colitis. Joining me today is Dr. Bruce Sands, Dr. Burl B. Crone Professor of Medicine at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai and System Chief in the Division of Gastroenterology at Mount Sinai Health System in New York, New York. Welcome back, Dr. Sands. It's always so, so good to have you with us.
Thank you, Kia. Pleasure to be here with you.
Awesome. So in our last podcast, we talked about the wide range of therapies approved for use in patients with UC. And we also talked about the new therapies in the pipeline. And while these agents, you know, obviously provide new opportunities for improved outcomes, they also add increased complexity and an uncertainty about which choice is appropriate for a given patient. So what are some of the challenges clinicians face in navigating patients through therapy selection in ulcerative colitis?
Yeah, you're right. It is challenging because there are so many choices to wade through and consider, and the conversations with patients seem to get longer and longer. There are a number of factors that make it more and more difficult. It's not just that there are so many agents, but also there are so many newer agents recently. And those newer agents aren't typically included in current guidelines. The guidelines may have been published 4 years ago. They're not updated every minute. There's a new drug that comes online. And so I think providers sometimes may be confused because they don't have these guidelines available to them in an updated fashion. Hopefully we'll see that change in the future. Maybe we'll see electronic guidelines that may be a better way of updating things. Additionally, you know, we don't have that many studies that really compare one drug directly to another. The standard for approving drugs in the United States, at least, is comparison to placebo, but that doesn't really directly typically help you compare one drug to another. So that can make it hard to choose. The next difficulty is really kind of wading through the risks and benefits of a drug. And of course, you might be familiar with the efficacy of drug, and you might be familiar with the risks or side effects of a medication, but you have to apply that to the individual patient sitting in front of you, and that can be difficult, and you want to tailor the conversation to that patient's considerations. You know, and then we have very specific issues depending on each agent. I think one of the things is anti-TNFs in particular have this issue of immunogenicity, and when patients develop anti-drug antibodies, they will typically lose response to that particular medication within the class of TNFs. And then we have to take into account what are the patient's concerns, what are their values and preferences. They may have preferences about whether they prefer an oral therapy, a pill, or something that's injected or infused. It won't be the same answer for every patient. And then there will be patient characteristics. They may be more or less conservative in their assessment of risk, or their personal medical history may also include things that may just predispose them to more risk, for example, a history of cancer. So when you put all that together, you know, we used to, I think, when things were a little bit simpler, we would think about algorithms of treatment. And increasingly, we have this complex matrix of treatment. It's not an algorithm. And it's become hard.
I can imagine. Yeah, it definitely sounds like there are a lot of factors you need to consider when deciding, you know, what's best for a given patient. Now, in your experience, what are the biggest challenges patients face with some of the conventional approaches to UC care?
Well, I think there are a number of concerns. One is they may have concerns, you know, we're used to this era of biologics. Biologics only can be administered by injection or infusion. And patients, not only do they not like the idea of injecting themselves or having to take the time to get an infusion, they also view that as heavy duty medication. You know, it's just this feeling, you're giving me a shot or an infusion, this must be serious. So they have concerns about that. They generally have concerns about the safety of therapies. They kind of lump things together. So they'll look at biologic therapy and they'll think that all biologic therapies may have the same risks when that actually isn't true. There are great differences in the classes of biologic therapies that are available, especially differentiating the anti-TNFs from the non-anti-TNF biologics. I think it's also hard for them to communicate as patients what their own personal goals are and preferences when they talk with their provider. And providers have different levels of ability, and let's face it, patients, with eliciting those preferences and concerns and goals from their patients. And patients we know have actually different goals in mind from physicians. If you ask physicians what they want to see objective improvement. Yes, they also want the patient to feel better, but they have the long term in mind. Patients mostly focus on the here and now and just feeling well, whereas the provider knows that if they're going to feel well for the long haul, we really better get to the point of healing the lining of their colon. You know, and so the last thing I think that is a challenge is patients have a hard time differentiating symptoms from inflammation or lack of inflammation, meaning that sometimes you see improvement of the inflammation or resolution of the inflammation, and patients have persistent symptoms, and they construe that as the drug not working, when in fact the drug has worked perfectly well to tamp down the inflammation, but they may have other reasons for having abdominal pain or diarrhea or any of a number of other symptoms, fatigue, and so on. So sorting through all of that can be difficult. It's not just conventional therapies, but all our therapies can be challenging to kind of sift through with patients.
Right, right. Really, really great points. Definitely, I can imagine patients, you know, you're seeing improvements and they're still feeling those symptoms. There has to be a lot of confusion and, you know, a lot to navigate there. How might patient preferences impact UC therapy? You know, in a situation where, like I said, you know, you may have observed an improvement in their UC clinical manifestations, but they're still having some bothersome symptoms. How do you navigate that, and how does patient preferences impact the choice?
Right. It's not a rare situation where the patient has had mucosal healing and they still have symptoms. And I think the way that I approach that situation is, for one thing, you have a visual. You've done a colonoscopy, presumably before treatment, and you should be doing a treat-to-target colonoscopy after an appropriate period of treatment. And there you can simply show patients how it looked before and after. And I think the visual is very impressive to patients. So that helps them understand that they're healed up on the inside. And then you have to really work on what the causes are for the other symptoms. Fatigue can outlast inflammation. You have to look into effects in sleep. Really, you might be thinking about sort of an irritable bowel overlay. Maybe you can treat it with antidiarrheals non-specifically. So you need to try to address those symptoms, not just say, well, your inflammation is better, so that's just the way it is. You can't be satisfied with that. But, you know, there are certainly other kinds of preferences and understandings that come into play in making choices and decisions. Some patients clearly fear needles, will prefer oral medications very strongly. Others actually prefer the intermittent dosing and of a biologic and not having to take a pill every day. You see different preferences there. And of course, we should say that on top of all of this is the role of access to a specific treatment. And this has to do with insurance coverage, and that often is out of our control.
No, definitely. And excellent points as usual. In the second episode in the series, we talk with your colleague, Dr. Marla Dubinsky, and we talk with her specifically about patient-reported outcome measures with regard to bowel urgency in UC. Just a special note to our listeners, if you haven't checked out that episode, please be sure to do so. Dr. Sands, can you talk about some of the latest evidence regarding patient-reported outcomes in UC care?
Yeah, sure. Patient-reported outcomes are subjective by definition. It is what the patient says is bothering them. Now, historically in clinical trials, we've used the Mayo Clinic score, which incorporates really just two patient-reported symptoms, and those are rectal bleeding and stool frequency. We ask patients to keep a record of that in real time, day by day, and we tally that up and we create a score. That's great for getting drugs approved and for monitoring improvement. It's also actually not that hard to do in your clinical practice as you see patients as well. Of course, the Mayo Clinic score is backed up by what happens objectively in terms of healing of the mucosa, which is another component of the full Mayo Clinic score, or at least the partial Mayo score. And so we have both of these things, but I want to point out that there are other things that are not measured in the typical clinical trial for ulcerative colitis. For example, we don't ask about nocturnal diarrhea per se. That can be very bothersome. It interferes with sleep. It is incorporated in some of the other disease activity indices in ulcerative colitis, but not in the ones that are typically used to approve a drug. And one that's really come to the forefront recently, in the mirikizumab studies especially, has been a focus on bowel urgency. We know that bowel urgency has a disproportionate impact on patients' quality of life, and yet we're not measuring that typically in clinical trials. So in the mirikizumab trials, there was a great effort to validate a numerical rating system score that's from 0 to 10, so basically a Likert scale of 11 points, grading the urgency, and we know what a clinical meaningful improvement is, and we know what bowel urgency remission is. There are definitions for all of that. And I think we're going to see more and more of these kinds of patient-reported outcomes incorporated in clinical trials. And I think it's easy for us to ask these questions in day-to-day care as well.
Absolutely. So we've talked about what patients value and what their goals are in managing their UC. How can clinicians better incorporate patient preferences and shared decision-making into UC care?
Yeah, I think it starts with a conversation and a back and forth with the patient and really listening to the patients in an unthreatening and neutral way and respecting their views about their own health and what's important to them. Again, different patients will have different values. They may weigh different symptoms differently from other patients. They may weigh both the risks and the benefits differently. It has to do with what they want. They're adult patients who have agency in the decision, and just reassuring them that they're going to be the ones deciding, not you. You're going to help them through that decision. So, but to make them have to give them all the information they need to make that decision, you really have to start by helping them understand what their diagnosis is, what the nature of that diagnosis is, and what the prognosis is with and without treatment, what the options are available to them, and then help them sort it out. You want to share information both about efficacy and safety in ways that patients will understand. That means giving them likelihoods of response and likelihoods of specific negative outcomes of safety risks. Sometimes, especially for safety, where some of the important risks can be rare, it can be useful to depict that in diagrams. For example, when it comes to lymphoma risk with anti-TNF, that's on the order of a handful of patients out of 10,000 patients treated for a year. You can show actually, and these are available as tools, visual diagrams of 10,000 little patients on a piece of paper and marking off that six or seven of them might have a lymphoma. When you see it visually, it really is reassuring to the patient. They can make a more balanced decision. And in the end, once you've helped them come to this understanding, and hopefully you don't have to press them to an understanding at that moment that you have that discussion, you want to give them a little time to consider things, In the end, they have to make their decision, and you have to respect their decision. If you don't agree with their decision, I think you still have to respect it. I think medical legally, you should also document conversations, especially if you think the patient is not making the most optimal choice. You can document that in the record. But in the end, they're adult patients who have to be able to make their own decisions.
Excellent, excellent points, as usual. Dr. Sands, once again, we have learned a lot about UC treatment selection and how to make patient-centered decisions. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I hope to talk again soon about the ever-evolving UC treatment landscape.
My pleasure, Kia. It's been a real thrill to speak with you today.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us. This podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group. Med Learning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would like to also give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Lily, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity.